You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who it is?
We're Steven and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast. We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Steven and Dana, and we're in the room.
Well, now all my wine is gone.
What a bumpy start.
Welcome in the rumors to In the Room podcast with Steven and Dana. I'm Dana.
I'm Steven, and you just missed a whole other podcast of behind the scenes AV Club.
Riveting content.
Ooh,
of me just giving looks to my computer.
I mean, what else have we been doing the last 30 days?
Oh, man. I don't know. What have you been up to?
Let's see. I started a cross stitch.
What's the patron?
It's a large vintage Disneyland poster advertising the new Alice in Wonderland ride.
Trippy.
Yes.
Love it. I haven't been crafty at all, honey. At all. Let's get right into it with our guest this week because he's probably fallen asleep and drooling on
himself. My heart out passed an hour ago.
We're just going to call this one The Heart Out featuring John Arthur Hill.
Yes!
Give myself applause. Hi. So yeah, you have 59 seconds. Go. Hit it hard now.
Oh my God.
What's your favorite thing about me?
Oh my God. My favorite thing about you is that you really do take your time when you're not in technical difficulties really spin me into an anger. Just like the Moab, mother of all bombs. And you really kept your cool. You only said the F word, you know, like 50 times. And you like looked really mad. And like then you just dropped all visual. So I couldn't see the nasty looks you were giving your screen, aka me. And I really like your hair.
Thank you so much. I showered for you today. I shaved for you today. It was like maybe 8 days or 9 days of like not shaving. And I don't know.
Oh my God.
My roommate deserves more. I
kept my ring light on for you guys, even though we've lost visual, and I have not shorn my body hair on my face for 4 weeks, and it tells you a lot about your hormones and your 23andMe potential. You know what I'm saying?
Are you like, a Scraggle muffin?
I would look like a Hasidic Jew. If I did not shave for 4 weeks, I've been doing once a week and my face itches.
Wait, Steven, could you grow a full, like, bushy beard?
In
14 days. What's your facial hair? Really? Okay. That's so interesting to me.
I'm
an Ashkenazi Jew. Like, what's your question?
Oh, God, that would be so hot.
Do you know how hot that is to me? Yeah, it's the hottest. keep talking, because this is like not a, what's the porn version of ASMR? ASMR? PSMR?
Ashkenazi MR?
PRM?
PRN, you're an absolute idiot. Well, thank you. That's a great thing to infer about.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I love your show. I'm a huge fan. I love you guys. Thank you for having me. I'm already
thank
exhausted.
Thank you for coming.
Hi.
You've been on the Google document forever.
Forever.
Well, I'm glad you got around to me. It just took a pandemic and everyone else going through the list and to get to
listen,
me, it's fine. I'm also here.
It's very hard to keep track of, geographically speaking.
That is true. I am all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't realize you lived in LA. That doesn't even make sense to me.
It makes no sense, except I travel with a ring light in my purse.
I think I'm getting one for my birthday.
Oh, everyone needs one. There is no reason not to have one. Like, they sell them at CVS.
Like, the real one.
Yeah, like with a tripod. Yeah.
Yeah, something a little higher. I have like a clippy one from Target that was $10. It has a cool light, a warm light, and a mixed light.
Yes.
And I use it during therapy.
Yes.
It makes you feel good. It makes you feel on. It makes you feel caffeinated.
Yeah, I think there's like a $47 one on Amazon right now that's like the three choice light options and a tripod. So that's what we're getting, I think.
Oh my God. Well, I can not see you all, but see you all in my mind having them.
Yeah,
you're all
skin looks so good.
Fierce. Yeah.
As we age, it's all about lighting. So
yeah,
that's
and like
all I have to
benefit
say about that.
For Perfector, which they sell in vending machines in the airport. So how are you guys doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, all things considered, we are holding up. The kitchen experiments continue. What are you doing? How are you adjusting, acclimating, evolving?
Well, I was in New York, you know, when all of this kind of hit the fan. And then I got out of there on the 11th. My show at 54 Below was the 11th. I left the 12th. And then from that day on, I would have been quarantined in this apartment with a boyfriend who I was really only had been boyfriends with for like not a long time. So now we live together. So that's been a journey.
Oh,
yeah. It's a whole thing. Yeah. And like, are people telling their quarantine stories right now? I feel like it's a little bit like in 10 years, maybe we will. It's a little bit like early and boring, but like, yeah, I have been baking a lot. I think that it's been like a relationship with the dogs. It's been kind of an experience. Like we're so together. It's like I'm codependent with the dogs, and it's like I roll my eyes at them. Like, oh, that habit of yours. And it's like, oh, you learned it from me. Like it's just like complicated.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, like I have a roommate in a very small apartment, and
oh Jesus, God no.
We love each other, so that's great. And you know, you pick your battles. So I mean, he's using the kitchen right now. He bought a huge monitor for work, so now he has like a huge monitor and two little computers like on the kitchen table.
No.
And I'm just like, so that's your office now.
Queen, breathe. The kitchen, my kitchen table is my office. My beautiful boyfriend is a lovely photographer, and he is using the bedroom, lovely, beautiful desk for his desktop to edit photos. And I was like, my office, which was also the bed. So if you want to take a nap, if you were doing a little desk work, could be the huge bed. But now, and then we just ate lunch before starting this podcast, which officially started an hour ago. But we sat down to eat lunch and all my shit was over the table. And I was like, you know what? This is my desk and our kitchen. So we're just going to have to live with the ring light on it, the laptop on it, and talk about auditions and being in the room.
Really got to figure that shit out. Like he was working out in his room, which is a bit smaller. And I was like, you know what? If you want to work out in mine, which doesn't have an overhead light when you're pumping iron, like go right ahead. Just not need to communicate, you know?
Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good. I can't imagine being stuck with someone you hate.
Oh God.
I just can't imagine.
I worry about those people.
I know. Is it better? Wait, what do you think? Is it better to be alone or to be with someone you love and are learning about, or to be with someone just to have someone?
I think my preference, not necessarily my truth, but not necessarily not, I'd say my preference is be with someone you love, then be alone, then be with someone you anything else but love.
But you can't, But you can't. You have to choose one. Like, are you not quarantining just with one Percy purse?
No, we're totally quarantined with just, it's us and our friend who was going to be moving when all this started, and then he didn't. So we were like, listen, it's week one. Get in here and stay here.
But also, Stephen, I have to say, you've never lived with this friend that is in your apartment now. So that's a whole nother layer of, oh, now we're quarantining and it's not just a sleepover. Like, now I have to understand how you live and like all of that. So yeah, it's just another person.
Yeah, and that's where our home office tension came to be, because everyone had a door to close except me. And I realized, wait a minute, my name's on this lease. I need a door.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we negotiated the hours.
Yep.
And that's been helpful.
I think you need a door. A door does wonders. Even if you have to just put a beaded curtain on, like butterflies are freestyle. You know,
totally. Just right out of Oriental Trading, I can just pick the one I want, and it'll be
Go to Pearl. Oh, Pearl. That place closed.
Pearl River Mart. Anyway. No, it's back, but different location. It's not the same.
Oh, okay, okay. I love that place.
John Arthur Hill.
Here for you.
You are a producer, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what is the word called? Yeah, producer. Writer,
radio host,
multi-hyphenate,
an actor, a model, world class,
I'll take it.
Comedian, you're a comedian,
I'm like Charlotte Ray.
Yeah, you're like if Bruce Valanche and Phyllis Diller had a baby.
Oh, that's really good, actually. Yeah, because like, supposedly smart, but maybe just a, like, whatever, you know?
But
just
also, one of a kind. Because he can also, like, do his own shows, but you know what? He's the brain and the fucking Looney Tune voice behind a lot of stuff that people are laughing at.
Yes, you know what? The last time I saw him was when I saw Knives Out. He was on the front row, and I sat next to him.
Loved Knives Out.
I love Knives Out, and so did Bruce Valanche. And I walked into the arc light and I was like, hi, love Bruce Valanche. We were in Hairspray together, and I love that. Yeah, because I have been, that was how my TV career started, was being with people and kind of giving them funny things to say, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
On the spot. I'm not as rich as Bruce Valanche.
You're rich in a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm rich in ring light, in the $25 ring light.
Yes.
Got a lot of things going on. I do my little serious shows, kind of like you guys do your pods, and we speak. We do us.
Mm-hmm.
That's all people want, actually, I think.
I'm really happy to be able to do, at this point, I always felt like the thing I do best is to be myself, and it's always gone wrong, or it's always gone tits up when I've tried to squeeze into a box that didn't, or someone else's box, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, me being paid to be myself is really the best job to have for anybody, but really I can't do anything else, but be me. Cause aren't I fascinating? Sorry, go ahead.
You are, honey. And what is that, the frequency that you're on right now? Like the feels? Like, is that your optimal place where you're happy in what you do?
Yeah. And so now, you know, the young children are, you know, they really can do everything. They can direct, they can edit, they can write, they can produce, they can act and everything. But when I first came to LA, like, you know, I remember the day YouTube started. It was like, I could do all this stuff on my own, and I could, but it wasn't as embraced at that point. And so a couple of years later, and by that point, I just needed jobs. So I kind of stopped living in Mark Shaman's guest house and like messing around with videos for, you know, like, and I was like, well, I need an actual job now. So I kind of had to grow up. So now that things have come around, people are, you know, open to content that people are making on their own, and writing, producing, directing. And, you know, I've had a lot of experience doing all those things So so yeah, I mean that is it. I like speaking on the radio. I like talking. Getting up in the morning, I co-host Andy Cohen's show on Sirius XM in the mornings. I love doing that. We have our thing down.
And you're with your friend. What's fucking better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You guys know the drill. Isn't it the best?
Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah, there's such a freedom that comes with, I mean, we're not on the waves, but, and it's not just because it's not visual, but it seems like there's an intimacy that gets lost in television or bigger things with other stimulus when it's just somebody's voice, be it on a podcast or a radio or anywhere where you're just listening, you hear it different.
What, you're so right. When I'm watching a television show, no matter if I am, I've noticed that most people watch TV on their phone while it's on the screen, and they have to then stop and say what just happened, or they nudge each other and say, "Ugh, I can't believe you just missed that." Like, it's frustrating, but it's such a good, it's such a habit to be on your phone, refreshing, you know, and it's terrible. You get nothing done. So, but yes, I totally agree. I think there's something really nice about just speaking and having a conversation. People want to hear discourse. They want to hear a chat. They want to hear people talk, and not without just like pleasantries and fakeness. I mean, I've been nothing but fake this entire time. But I think
you've
in general,
you've also been
nothing
but completely pleasant. So I'll take it.
Oh, I'm cutting all of this.
So good. Thank God.
You have so many things on your plate that you're doing. Are you producing a TV show at this moment in time?
I used to just take I was kind of a TV show to TV show consulting producer. I worked my way up from being kind of like a director, field producer, you know, consulting producer, unofficial writer, on a lot of like docuseries, which were kind of comedic, but supposed to be quote unquote, real. Like I worked on Kathy Griffin D-List, yes. And shows that were, you know, heavily written, but, made to look like documentaries, lots of those shows. And, so I went from show to show to show, you know, for years. And then I kind of started doing studio shows. You know, I did Project Runway and Top Chef and a bunch of those shows just to kind of get a diverse resume. And then I worked late night. I worked to Watch What Happens Live and wrote on that show for 4 years. And then came out to LA to do more just kind of writing and selling scripts. So in terms of producing, I am in the sense that I am selling shows, going around, pitching shows, putting together shows with my agent and manager, and doing the very, very douchey thing that like an Uber driver would tell you about if he was or she was driving you around town saying, "Hey, I got a project. You want to hear about it?" You know, I do that without the driving around. I just,
yeah,
I say like,
living,
you know,
that
how about this
Zen,
project?
The Zen de bungalows life.
Yes, or the bungs. I'm bung hard. I'm bung, death by bung, bunga bunga.
Are you hard for the bung?
Yeah, no, I'm bunged out.
You're bunged out. Yeah, I think I went there once and I was like, "Ooh, this is something. This is something else."
The San Vicente bungalow used to be a sex club. Did you know that?
Shut up.
I didn't.
I believe it though.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it used to be like a sex club, and that's why like it's so like gritty to go there and like it and like all in like exclusive.
So exclusive.
And so, yeah, like back in like the way, like, you know, olden times.
It's like you enter through a bush.
You enter through a bush, which is fitting. And you, this is from, yeah. The only other sex club that I know of is The Zone, and it's right by the Sirius XM studios that I used to go to before COVID. And I can look out the window at the studio and see people coming out of The Zone. And sometimes I'm like, "Oh my God, Neil Patrick Harris." I'm just kidding.
Life is happening every day.
What a fierce view. Yes.
What a fierce view. Oh my God, the view's here. Oh my God. My view right now, even with my ring light blaring my eyes out of my skull, I can see just nothing but trees, blue sky, and a cactus that's dying. But it's my fault because I didn't water it. But hey, who said they need water? Cactuses.
I was going to say, that's really hard to do.
I don't want to like just skim over the fact that you lived in Mark Shaman's back guest house. What was that like?
Yeah.
Tell me everything.
Okay, so Mark, when Mark Shaman was in LA, he came to LA kind of when Bette Midler was transitioning, you know, expanding. Well, not expanding either, but you know what I mean. Her career was blossoming, and she was becoming a movie star and doing all those TriStar films and blah blah blah.
So the late '80s when she had a Disney contract.
Yeah, the you know big business and the you know outrageous fortunes. So he was out here, you know, beaches and all that stuff. So he had this house. It's the best house still known to man, to me, my dream house. It was a little cottage. Then they said, let's build a modern house next to it because they're making all this money because he's making movies like Adam's Family. So you know, he's in the $100 million movie club, which means he's made more movies, like. Over 10 movies that have made $100 million at the box office, these huge movies, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So then they built this like modern house next to it. Then they built a 2-story state-of-the-art studio. So it became a compound that was legendary when I was in Hairspray in New York. And Linda Hart would be like, oh my God, you don't know the LA house is a compound.
Oh my God, Linda
Hart. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I ran into Linda Hart at Gelson's in the produce department. This is a while back. I have no sense of time. And I was like going through Gelson's looking for like, you know, lettuce or whatever. And I see her pushing a cart I saw this person in a beret and I was like, no. Linda. And she was like, oh my God. I knew that she knew me. I knew that she knew we had done a show together 8 nights a week for 3 years or one at least. And she grabbed me, but I don't know if she really knew who I was, but I knew she knew that was a familiar arm to grab. And she was like, I've just been robbed. And I was like, here at Gelson? And she was like, she's like, no, up at the house, the police are looking through everything. Thank God they only took half of my jewels. And I was like, well, what are you doing? And she's like, we're going to our friend's house to stay there. And I told them I would just bring food over. And I was like, well, do you need help? And then she was kind of like, no. And then she just wandered off.
Okay, you guys. Linda
That's
Hart.
The most bizarre story I have ever heard.
Yes.
Sorry.
Also, anyway, so Linda Hart was my first Mazeppa.
Oh, what?
What is that?
In that Bette Midler Gypsy.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Oh, yes, Linda Hart has an amazing She's trip. One of Bette Midler's
Linda Hart might have turned
She was the original Harlette, like with Jennifer Lewis and all those folks. I mean, she was the white Harlette. I feel like my career is going to follow quite a similar path as Linda Hart. I feel like I'm like never going to step on a stage until I'm 50, which of course is like in 3 weeks. But like, and then I'm all of a sudden just going to be like back in a hit Broadway show. Just like, wait for it. Trust.
But also like start buying berets. I'm sure you could find like 6 for a dollar on Amazon. And jewelry,
and
big chunky jewelry.
For you when I'm in a Gelson's.
A statement necklace.
Oh my God. So back to the story. When I went to LA, I said to Mark, I was like, listen, I'm going to LA. I'm going to start selling TV shows and like living the bi-coastal life because I'm like such a superstar. And he was like, sure, live in the guest house. The guest house being like the cute, like ancient cottage where like Bette Midler would stay. And she has like famous stories about like plates of cocaine flying in the carpet. And like, she does a famous interview in front of the staircase. Like it's a legendary house, best view in the world, best vibe. It's like Brigadoon. You drive up this big hill and like, it's a misty canyon. And I lived there for like, I hate to say this, like a really, a freaking long time. And when I was up there, I thought I got so much done. I got like a lot of like laughing done.
That's good. That adds years to your life.
I got a lot of videos done with Lucian Piani, who had lost his mind.
Is that like RuPaul's Drag Race, Lucian?
Yeah, I got him that
job. Okay, great. Got it.
He was my roommate for 2 years. LA has been an experience. It's been a journey. All right, back to your questions. I lived
in Mark Shaman. That was like your Mark Shaman stories that also include Linda Hart. that's my porn. So thank you. That's
well. So I lived at Mark Shaman's house, and Katie Leonard, who played Luann in the original cast of Hairspray, lived at Kristen Bell's house across the hill. So no we way. Would just go back and forth to each other's like more richer friends' home, where we would live, and just like whichever pantry was better to raid that day, we'd just stay there and listen, just like hang out.
Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard have talked about this a lot. Like they've. Well, Kristen, before Dax, famously housed so many people coming to LA who, you know, without that leg up, without not having to pay rent, you know, that's a huge deal.
Oh, you want to know?
I don't know how people do it without.
Yeah, no, did it help me? Who knows? But like, Kristen also speaking, I don't think I've told anyone this. Or at least any sort of recording. Yeah, breaking news. She got, I didn't have a car really. I kind of, I was driving my friend's car, and then she was like, it was diesel. And she was like, hey, I'm going to give my car to this peanut oil company that's turning old diesel cars into cars that run on peanut oil. And I'm like, no, I'll just keep the car. And she's like, no, I'm going to donate for the environment. I'm like, well, fuck you. I don't have a car now. And then she was like, no, I'm taking the car. So then Kristen was like, well, you should just take my Jetta because I get a free Lexus if I drive one on Veronica Mars. So I have this like Jetta sitting around. So I drove her Jetta for 6 months and I shit my pants in it once. I had diarrhea in it.
Oh my God, what a queen. Okay, I don't want to stop you on that story either. Go ahead.
That's how'd that the end turn of the story?
Out? That's not the end of the story.
No, I had to.
How
go
did
down.
You? Were you on the way to a meeting, or like were you just going home?
No, I was on the way to meet Kristen's agent at UTA, and I had the diarrhea, and then I went to the meeting anyway. That's the kind of backwards brain I have.
Huh. Oh.
Needless to say, they didn't sign me. I wonder what it could have been. Remember that guy?
I feel like if you would have been honest in that moment, you would have been signed. They would have been like,
maybe
this guy's
maybe.
Really got it.
Yeah. I would have been like, you know what? I came in, but I shit my pants. I got to go. I don't know. Well, who knows? But Kristen's a super generous lady. Love her.
Yes.
She's the greatest.
Love,
so
love,
is Mark.
Love.
He's a lady.
God.
In waiting. Speaking of, am I giving you what you need?
No, I'm cutting all of this until we find something that's really, really good.
Okay.
No, this is everything.
No, well, I don't, John. So I'm also a reality TV producer.
Okay, great. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
I hated it.
Well, yeah, if it's not your bag, it's not your bag. But we both worked with Tim Gunn, who is
amazing.
Speaking of generous people, I mean, he's just the dolliest of dolls.
He's a doll. Is someone playing
not me.
Bette Midler version of Gypsy in the background? Linda Hart? Is Ms. Zeppa?
You gotta get a gimmick.
Sorry.
Yeah,
once in a while, we live on a corner and people like to go around it and blast the music real loud, and that's what that was.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, it's a nice little, it keeps you on your toes around here.
Well, so what kind of reality shows, so are you still producing reality TV?
Yeah, so I work for a company, I'm not freelance, so I don't have the luxury of hopping around.
That's not a luxury. It's better to work at a company that you enjoy.
That's right. I have the luxury of being staff. So we work on documentary films. We did the best worst thing that ever could have happened, that Merrily doc.
Amazing.
And then
great.
Thanks. And then, we do like Hotel Impossible on the Travel Channel and like Investigation Discovery and stuff for Amazon. And I don't know. It's just all over the place. So
are you allowed to say the name of the company?
It's fun. It's called Atlas Media, and
okay,
yeah, that's what's happening.
Great. Yeah. Just, you know, that the reason I don't love reality TV is because I don't love drama that doesn't end up on TV, and a lot of the drama on reality television happens behind the scenes, and it's kind of petty. There's a lot of stress. I take it. I internalize that stress. I like to. I don't like that in my personal life. and I take it home with me. I can't shake it, and it has taken a toll on me mentally. So I had to step away from doing reality shows because I do not like conversations about shit that doesn't matter. I don't like conversations, except for this one. I don't like conversations
just in general
about stuff because people want to seem like they're doing a job when they're not doing anything. I'd rather people not do anything, do their job in 30 minutes and go home. I was really good at being the EP shower and boss of shows, but I was not good at being the person who just would watch problems waiting to be solved. I knew the solution, but no one else wanted to do the solution because of egos. A lot of that goes down to reality TV for me, and I couldn't handle it. So I moved to scripted and to late night joke writing. Joke writing is great. You write the joke, everyone laughs. Yay, we have a good time. You write a joke, it tanks, it sucks. Everyone still laughs because how funny is that you wrote a bad joke? Done.
I bet.
You know?
So fun. So
that's my take. Is that deep? Cut it.
No, I love that.
Yeah, I, those things are all true.
For sure. Like there's a and lot people, of just like
reality TV isn't new anymore, you know. So people are they think that they know the formula, and they know that they're playing a character, and so it's really hard to.
At the end of the day, having done theater my entire life. I was not a good auditioner. Or whatever. Maybe I was at some point, but I didn't feel like I was made to be just an actor or just a singer or anything. I felt like I had a lot of different skills. But at the end of the day, with reality television in particular, I felt like, you know, philosophically, when this is all said and done, if there's a pandemic. Or, you know, the world like crumbles into ashes. What do I want to say I left behind? A reality show where Tori Spelling and Dean McDermott went and looked at bed and breakfasts? Or do I want to say I left behind an essay about how I like was behind the scenes giving my first hand job at Little Night Music Community Theater in Texas when I was 14? I think the latter. Honestly, like I don't. You know what I mean? Like, or like, do I want to leave behind a story I thought of and told someone that entertained someone? Not did I put meat in a grinder to just keep something on the television screen? I didn't watch TV growing up a lot. We were highly censored. So like, it's not in my, oh God, there's a siren. So like it's not really in my, bones to say like what, like what TV?
You said
can
bone.
I
said marrow.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I mean, no, that makes sense.
There's a sexual joke there, I'm sure. Mm. Yeah,
but you also get to live your alter ego life as Helvetica.
Yeah, I do. I do, and you know what? People like it. I had a really rough time. Like, I felt she was very annoying and such a ripoff. And then I thought, well, you know, whatever. She's entertaining, so she's back.
I love it. You're so stupid.
I am so stupid. And I'm much funnier as her than I am as myself. That's fun.
I have to ask you a question that is so, I'm sure you're done talking about this for the last 15 or so years, but
I'm not
I've never talked with you about Bear, which is a huge part of like my theater story growing
up. Was it? Okay.
It was because
you grow up?
I grew up in Thousand Oaks, California.
Oh my god. I went to Pepperdine. You were right over the corner. You were like a child when I was in college, huh?
I wouldn't say child, but sure. So Bear, I was coming of age where like moving to New York was now in the near immediate future. And that's when Bear was happening here. And I was like, oh. It was kind of the first time I got my finger on the pulse of like what's happening right now in New York, as opposed to, ooh, what's like the next Sondheim show I can learn.
Right.
So Bear was of like my gateway drug
Hedwig was that for me when I was first moving to New York.
It let me into the door a little bit of like, this is what's going on that isn't on the boards.
Yes.
In your face all the time. Like, here's the other stuff.
How'd you hear about it again? Oh, the internet.
Probably the internet. Yeah. And that sampler, that 11 track.
Oh my God, I'm barely on that.
I wore that thing down.
I hear that from people. Gosh, I love hearing that people love that show. I love it. I never get sick of hearing that. It makes me so happy. Someone posted about it yesterday and I got messages.
Yes, like, you are on Bygone Broadway.
Bygone Broadway. And like, it's so nice. I love having been in that experience. That was a one of a kind moment. And it did hit hard for a lot of people. And it was a pivotal moment in each of those people's lives in that show at that mm-hmm. time and changed mm-hmm. everybody, I think.
I have a bootleg of your production.
Okay.
So I've seen that and I saw one production of it out in Long Island when I moved here.
How does it hold up?
Oh, and I saw it off-Broadway later. How does it hold up? For me, it's nostalgic. I don't know. I don't know how it holds up now because I haven't watched it through the lens of today. Watched it? Haven't seen it through the lens of today. But, you know, whenever I listen to it, I'm in my Saturn, you know, cruising the streets. Just melting at 9 p.m. on a Tuesday on my way to Del Taco.
Right. And you're a Peter, you're a Peter person, right? I mean, no one wants to be the Jason. No one wants to be me.
Well, but I could sing that part because I'm not a tenor. So
my
that
part.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could sing that a lot easier than I could sing Michael Arden.
The tough thing about that show was that it was weird because I had done Chris and Miss Saigon. I had done high tenor roles, and I technically was, but the score and the way it was written, there were a lot of like miscommunications between me and Damon, rest in peace, about how it should sound. And I don't think I ever fully understood how he wanted it to sound, and I think my voice didn't have the right quality for what he envisioned. Because I mean, I can wail, I can give you a top, honey, but it's supposed to be kind of like, I think more of like, at that point it was supposed to be more of like a silky pop, voice, you know? And I think I had more of a musical theater moment that I was trying to hide.
Well, God bless it. You let those colors shine, John Hill.
Oh, yeah, that show was intense. I hit my head on a beam at one point. And then I had to, right before I, we had to like move in the dark. And right before I overdosed on drugs and then die and kill myself and while singing on stage, I ran backstage and I ran headfirst into a pole and I will never forget it. I still feel it to this day. Like if I'm on a roller coaster and my brain is, you know, I can feel I don't have enough like spinal fluid. I feel like I hit my head really hard. I went on stage and it wasn't even acting. Like I literally like died. And then, you know, as you may or may not have seen in the bootleg, everyone, like I die and then they carry my body off stage because I die. Mm-hmm. I overdose on GHB, which was a really hip, trendy way to kill yourself in those days. So that's how I died. It was funny because like there's a lot of practice of like they wanted to really show that like I drank too much. I drank the GHB and I took the moment to decide I'm just gonna drink this whole thing. There were a lot of questions, and I will speak, and they can denounce me if they must. But the whole thing was a large conversation of like, is like, what, a little bit of like a what, like between Michael and myself and Natalie and Adam Fleming. Like there was a lot of just questions of like, is this the, you know, like, is the tragedy here that I will drink this GHB and kill myself during Romeo and Juliet? And then die. Like maybe it's a wrist slit. I don't know. Like there was just a lot of like big conversations of like, And they're like, no, GHB, like, that's what's happening, like, right now, super current, like, super, super, super current. And it was like, all right, so we're going to practice doing this GHB OD moment. And they're like, okay, we're going to have a special on the bottle. And if it's okay with you, we're going to put a tiny little drop of fluorescent oil in the liquid so that the audience can really see that it's liquid that you're drinking. And I was like, oh, well, okay. Well, that then I am going to kill myself then. So go for it. Just kill me slowly, like in Hush with Gwyneth Paltrow and Jessica Lange. So like, fine. Yeah. Kill me. So we did that. We had to practice that a lot. And I was like, can I just say to someone, not that I'm like, you know, outing myself as a drug addict, but like, this isn't enough. It was like a tiny little bottle. I was like, give me like a 2 liter, like, you know, big gulp. Like, this is not going to kill a man of my size. Pardon my, I don't know, size. Excuse my beauty.
Your beauty is excused. Is that where you first met Natalie, or did you guys know each other prior?
No, Natalie and I met at auditions.
Amazing.
And I know what they were doing. They were trying out blondes and blondes because they were fraternal brother and sisters, and Natalie was brunette at the time, and I was brunette at the time. And I was like, oh, it's either me and this bitch, or it's either that dude and that bitch.
Mm.
And then I was like, no. And then I knew that, like, I was older enough seeming than Michael. Well, I was older than Michael, like 3 years older. But like, I knew that, like, Michael and I were a pair. I don't know. I was kind of like, oh, this is who it's going to be, because we all kind of fit together. Sure. And Natalie and I looked like we could be a fraternal twin brother and sister.
Mm-hmm. Thank God.
Thank God. I mean, we've melded into one. I'm her Bruce Valanche. I write her shows.
Yes. Yes, her brilliant writing. Brilliant writing.
One won the New York Musical Theater Festival Award. Did it not?
I don't know if the one that I wrote won that, but wait, it did. Was it Full Bush?
Full Bush, I believe. Yes.
Oh, listen. Can I tell you? Full Bush was ahead of its goddamn time. There's a trilogy.
Yes, it was.
Bring it back.
There's a trilogy. Relentless was the first one. Full Bush was the second one. And The Raging Case was the last one, I believe. No.
Yes.
Maybe that was Was it called The Raging Case? You saw all three? You have not seen all three.
I've seen all three.
Well, then,
I have my fucking program from Full Bush. Are you kidding me?
Wait, do you? I love you for that. Like, I feel like this is my favorite thing about me. I feel like no one has seen my best work, including Bear. The show was on for 4 weeks. It was on for literally, no, 8 weeks. It was on for literally like 2 months.
No one knows you like Stephen Ferrazzi knows you.
And oh my God, that makes me so happy.
My memory is wrong. Like,
how many times did we even do Full Bush? Like three? Once?
I was going to say two or three.
I mean, I dry humped her, exposed her vagina, wrote the, okay. Well, Full Bush. You're talking to an award-winning person here. I'm so excited for myself.
Hello. We've never had one of those before.
Oh, lies.
How
am I doing? Tell me. Give me feedback.
You're so perfect. We're going to let you go soon. We have a question that we ask all of our guests that we have not asked you yet, which is...
Hi-ho! Hi-ho!
In history, there are 7 very well-known dwarves. If you were the 8th dwarf, what would your name be?
Okay, can you name the other 7?
Doc, all right. Bashful, Sleepy, Sneezy.
Grumpy. Bashful.
Yeah, okay, no, I'll think about it. Like, I was thinking of the names of the reindeer. I'm like, Blitzen's taken. Can't be Prancer. I would be, if I was a dwarf, I would be just like emo. I would be a loofy. I would be a loofy. Or shady. Either shady or a loofy. I'd definitely be a loofy.
A loofy because shady's already taken.
Yeah.
I'm a loofy. Loofy.
I'm definitely a loofy.
That fits. I like it.
I'm going to think of you now every time I reach for my loofah.
Like, if you ask some of the people that, like, when I was young and, like, really, like, cunty, I'm sure that one's taken as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the nicest way they can put it about my behavior back then was aloof. So, we'll leave it at that. Or could it be desperate-y?
Desperate-y dwarf?
Desperado.
Oh, that's cute. Desperado. We'll stick with the Luffy.
And then our other question that you kind of answered at the top without us having to ask it, as we usually ask first impressions, what your first impression of each of us was.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
Well, Dana, my first impression of Dana. No, but Dana, can you please forgive me? Yes. We have not met before.
Not really. Oh, we met very briefly, but it wasn't even like a conversation. It was just this past year at Green Room, Natalie's show.
I was very concerned because my niece was, 16 and she saw those dicks and butts in the videos and the thing.
Yes. It was basically a handshake and hello.
Great. And of course, Fariz, I will always remember. My first impression was, we were friends, kind of like social media friends first. And then in real life, I felt like we had known each other for years. And it was like lots of, like, on my part, I'm sorry if I like Harvey Weinsteined you, like grabbed you and groped you and like held you close to me, like forced your like face into the nuzzlement of my collarbone. Tenderness.
It's like MasterCard, the only place I want to be.
Priceless.
Oh my god. Genius.
Hold me closer, tiny dancer.
Okay. Speaking of MasterCard, Matt Morrison and I did a MasterCard commercial that never saw the light of day because it was too creepy. Pre-hairspray. That's how we knew each other. That's how we got recommended for the job. To replace him.
Really?
When he became Link. Yeah,
that Hairspray family is so close, and it makes me so happy to see all these years later, all of you still like hanging out and loving each other and like living your dreams.
Living our dreams. I was on Seth Rudetsky's show with Mark Shaman last night and Jennifer Lewis, and we had a little Hairspray moment. Mm-hmm. And Carrie Butler as well. Yeah, but
in Hairspray when I first moved here. She was my motor mouth.
Oh, and it's when you moved to New York. Yeah. I had returned to the show, tail tucked between my legs after barefolded and gone back. So you might have seen me probably like standing in the back with like my middle finger at the audience.
Dana, check your playbill.
I was there to see my friend Kurt Hansen.
Love Kurt. Oh, so cute.
In his first Broadway show. Yeah.
Adorable. He's cute. I'm sure I terrorized him.
He deserves it. 100%. Yeah.
All right. Do I get to be the narcissist who returns the question and asks you what your first impression of me was? And be honest?
Oh, God.
Okay. I'm ready. I mean, my first impression of you, again, was Bear. I had the biggest crush on you all through high school, but I was not gay yet, so nobody could know about it. But you were my secret crush. You were my like covers with a flashlight. New York crush.
Oh, that's real. Like
like a physical crush?
Like a physical crush.
Okay. ASMR me. Great. Okay. And Dana, you can be
John Hill, I might have to offline with you and tell you my first impression.
It was bad.
No, not on your part.
On your part?
Not on your part. I find you to be incredibly talented and super stupid. And those are the highest quality compliments I can give someone.
Okay.
Yeah, in your work, like in your writing, I appreciate how like deep into the barrel you reach to get the right joke at the right time. It's so fun to watch.
I'll let you know. I'll offline with you. It's so triggering. I hate it.
That is so, well, I'm so glad that I could bring that into your world, even if it was slightly painful for a second, but I'm glad that it brought us all together and full circle and right now. And oh my God, you're both queens. And thank you for having me.
Oh, I love you so much. You're I'm so glad best. You're finally on our program and that we didn't even have to be in the same place to do it. And now we know.
I have so many more things to share with you and I want to know so many more things, but people find you online?
Oh yeah, please do. Please come to me on social media. John Arthur Hill, that is the Instagram. And on Twitter, I'm the boss of you, which is just my old handle from when I was like young. But I'm keeping it
until someone really rich wants to.
I know. Well, until someone wants to buy it, like can't you imagine? Like someone rich is going to want like to own that name, and that's the only way I'm ever going to make any money in life. Anyway, so that's where you can find me. A Serious Mondays, Wednesdays. Now it's Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, 10 a.m. New York time, 7 a.m. LA time. Thursdays, my show, The Feels, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And that's all on Radio Andy on Andy Cohen's channel on Sirius XM. Listen.
Thank you so much.
All right, you're an actual queen.
You're an actual queen.
We always end in a chord. Bye.
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 In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.